there.
But obviously you had a very interesting upbringing. I mean, your parents were very interesting people.
Yes.
But do you remember Dora Montefiore at all?
Yes. She was... yes, Dora Montefiore was one of the new type of women that my mother's interest in suffrage was bringing into the home, whom I found extremely stimulating and admired.
She became a communist, didn't she, in the end? I mean, she had a very strange career, didn't she?
You know, that, I think, if people start on one reform, they're very apt to go further and further.
Absolutely, yes.
And I have known it happen very markedly in Egypt, where one of the pioneers had to... had to suffer house arrest for quite a long time, simply because from being an ardent nationalist and then an ardent suffragist, she then became an ardent communist.
Yes, it's interesting, yes. She's an interesting woman, actually, I think. What was she like as a person? I mean, was she easy to get on with, in your recollection?
Yes.
And she wasn't, she was only in the NDRSS for a short time, wasn't she? She left after a bit and she was involved in adult suffrage, really, wasn't she?
Adult suffrage. I think that's where she was interested in adult suffrage. Mm. And that was one of the real difficulties that we had to face, that one of the two, the only two political parties at that time was pledged to manhood suffrage. And the suffragettes never made, I think, enough allowance for the divided loyalties of men who were really perfectly prepared to give women suffrage on a limit, as on the conservative property basis, but were terrified of and felt they couldn't drag their party with them into giving the franchise to more women than men.
Yes, yes.
You see, there was this extraordinary supposition that women would immediately form a woman's party antagonistic to men, which is against all human nature.
I entirely agree, and of course it hasn't turned out like that at all.
Of course it hasn't turned out like that at all. Mm. Because you're a woman, the great controversies during that time were over education and free trade, and neither had the slightest bearing on whether you were a man or a woman. It was on your economic and religious.
Absolutely, and people, men and women on both sides.
And therefore you had you couldn't tell whether there would be more men or more women.
No,
and another extraordinary thing was that men seemed curiously afraid of the vote of prostitutes. Quite regardless of the fact that I don't know how many men it takes to keep a prostitute, but I still thought that for every prostitute there were 30 or 40 dissolute men.
Absolutely.
See, it was most extraordinary. And also another thing which always struck me as very comic was the idea that if you let a wife have a vote, it would immediately break up the marriage. It don't seem to me rather a peculiar attitude if that marriage should be so frail an institution that having a vote for somebody your husband didn't like every 4 or 5 years was sufficient to wreck an otherwise stable and affectionate relationship.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
And of course, I don't think the young women today can really imagine what nonsense was talked.
Did you ever go to any anti-meetings? Did you know any aunties?
Oh, yes, I knew a lot of aunties. Yes, I went in order to heckle and...
What sort of things did you say?
I think... that reminds me of an interval when I was doing at a suffrage meeting in Rome and was asked out to dinner to meet the papal representative, and found myself between, so to speak, the Vatican and the most charming Italian duke, who said to me, "But Mrs. Ashby, don't you think if you give a vote to women, it will break up the home?" And for an awful moment, I just looked at him and thought, "Good Lord, what use did I to say to that?" As women had then the vote in England, but not in it. And I really couldn't remember how to counter such a silly remark.
Yes, it's extraordinary. What made you into a suffragist, really, do you think? Why did you become a suffragist?
Well, I suppose my mother's extreme and practical interest in social work, the fact that my father from the start insisted on equal education for my brother and for me. So having been brought up as an equal, it was simply logical to go on.
I quite understand, yes. Did your mother like you doing this? I mean, did she?
Oh, yes, it was a most united family. And when my father was standing as a liberal candidate here, I made my first political speech. My father and mother had gone on to another meeting. The woman, a friend next to me, said, "You're the only member of the family here. You must move the vote of thanks." "I can't," I murmured. At that moment, the speaker sat down. I rose to my feet and proposed the vote of thanks. And having, so to speak, learnt to speak by being thrown into the water, my parents used me. My mother had a cold. I was sent to open the bazaar. But as a matter of fact, it was college that gave me my chance. We, at Newnham College then, we had an extremely lively political society with both, there was no Labour Party, a very strong section, Liberal and another Conservative, and each party took it in turns to form the government.
Like a debating society.
Like a debating society. And we learnt the whole of the mechanism of politics, how to introduce a bill and carry it through its different stages. So that really when I left college, I not only knew very little Greek and Latin, but also a great deal about politics.
Interesting, yes. Did you owe anything much to your tutors at Cambridge? I mean...
Nothing.
Yeah, they didn't influence you.
No, because they were very hesitant. In fact, it was a terrible shock to me when I went up to Newnham to discover that the dons, instead of being enthusiastic for women's suffrage, regarded it with dismay.
Did they really? You surprised me, actually. Why did they, do you think?
I think perhaps at that time the intelligentsia was rather otherworldly. I don't think that the women dons were more...
They're more interested in their studies, really.
They were so anxious that women should do well in their studies. You see, we still had to prove ourselves. That they felt that any kind of outside interest might slacken their interest in their school.
Of course, I understand, yes. Yes. Because Eleanor Rathbone got a lot out of a little discussion group that she had at Somerville, didn't she, as well?
Yes, some of them have been different. I can only speak for Newnham, where we were intensely political, but not particularly suffrage.
Yes, yes.
I think we were much more interested in free trade and education than we were in the suffrage.
So when you went down from Newnham, you then went into social work, didn't you?
Well, I had a year at the training college.
a teacher's training?
A teacher training college, because, though of course it was quite unusual, my parents agreed that girls ought to have a background of a professional, that women ought to get used, or girls ought to get used to feeling that there was really no security in life. You couldn't be sure you were going to marry a good-looking millionaire. And therefore you ought. But it was part of the status then, really.
Yes, and you didn't come out at all then. I mean, you didn't have a coming-out ball or anything like that. You went straight into a profession.
I first went to University College to do a statistics under a man called Adney. Very clever.
Adney Yule, was it?
Adney.
Adney Yule.
Yes, I've heard of him.
Hmm.
And
what did you do that for? Because you did classics at Cambridge. Why should you do statistics?
Well, you see, when I went up there, I was asked what I wanted to study. I knew I couldn't do mathematics. I could speak French. I was almost bilingual. I really was bilingual in English and French. And I could speak fluent German. So modern languages didn't attract me. I had done no science. I knew the names of every wildflower. And that was all. And I realized that a home education hadn't been nearly as much of a discipline, probably, as school. And therefore I cut out history as being, it would only encourage me in vagueness, so to speak. I wanted a thoroughly
discipline.
I wanted the hardest discipline. And so I chose classics, in which my father could help me, because he used to read Xenophon for fun going up in the train to his office.
In the Greek?
In the Greek, yes.
You were educated by your parents, were you, or by
governesses? Governesses and parents. We first had for years French governess, then we had a series of German governesses, then we had a most remarkable woman, a Miss Eckenstein, who did teaching in the summer in order to help Flinders Petrie with his Egyptian excavations.
Yes.
And she gave us very good grounding. And my father taught us Latin and Greek and mathematics. And mother, very typically of the times, took us before breakfast with Bible and piano.
Well, it sounds a very cultivated family, actually. I mean, there's an atmosphere of study in the family.
My father was one of the people with an encyclopedic memory, and if any question came up to which he didn't know the answer, he would go straight to the bookcase, you see, and give us the answer. He knew exactly where to look up a reference. So I suppose it was rather an unusually cultivated.
So you were educated with your brothers, were you?
Yes, with my brother.
All together?
All together. And he went up to New College, where my father had been. And when my grandson went there, he was the fourth generation.
Oh, well. Well, and you've got two brothers, haven't you?
Or no, only one.
Only one. You've got a sister as well.
A sister.
What did your sister do then?
She went to Somerville.
Oh, did she? I see. Because she wasn't active as a suffragist, was she, as you were?
She was... No. Yes, yes, at the beginning. Then she joined, later on joined the Labour Party when it, I stayed faithful to Liberal. But she went up to Somerville and took her degree. Well, we both took what are called steamship degrees, let's say. We paid our fees at Dublin University.
I see, so you actually got a degree for
she,
it.
Because
this was before Oxford gave
degrees. Before Oxford or Cambridge gave degrees. They only gave a certificate. And I had thoughts that perhaps I would like a post abroad, to which I felt our Chancellor's letter was not nearly as good as letters after our name. So we both went over and took our degrees. And I've had very pleasant relationship with since, including being able to handle the Book of Kells brought out from the sea.
That's marvellous. So, your mother, who was your mother?
Mother was Mary Gray. Her father had made his fortune as a Scotchman in the city. In fact, both grandparents, George Gray came from Scotland and founded the big confectionery firm Clark Nicholson Coon with two friends, and my father's father came as an architect and was taken up by a man, I'm not sure whether he was an architect. Anyhow, he had the money and my father had the brains,
more or less. Your father was an architect, was he, when he wasn't an MP?
He became quite a name in the city. I was, I forget what they call it, whether it's president or chairman, of the city property owners.
Oh, I see.
My grandfather built the first modern offices in the city.
Did he really? Which were they?
They were, it's changed its name. Corbett and... Corbett and Newson, and they built the first modern offices in Gracechurch Street. By modern, meaning a block that was only offices, you see. Otherwise, people lived above their offices in the city, and this was the beginning of the trend to have only offices.
What made your father a liberal, do you think, and why was he a liberal, do you think?
Well, it's quite true, Gilbert and Sullivan, you're born a liberal or you're born a conservative. It's your attitude of mind.
He was a very humane sort of person, wasn't he?
The part he played, you see, when I was a child, rural England was really feudal still, and it was seemed very stable because both sides accepted complete responsibility for what was their job, you see. That's to say, if anything happened in the village, a man lost a cow, or someone was ill, or someone got into trouble, they simply walked up to the house to have the trouble sorted out. And neither...
Liberal or conservative.
You see, it was a complete equality. If you were the landowner and main labour-giving person, you therefore had responsibility for everybody you employed. There was a lovely letter I've quoted my mother read out at breakfast. "Dear Mrs. Corbett, we can't do nothing with our Jane. Yours, Mrs. Smith."
So what was your father's attitude?
Mother simply got into the pony cart and drove out to sort out the trouble with our Jane.
What was your father's attitude? I mean, did he encourage them to depend on him like this?
No. He took it as... He was a lawyer. You see, he was a barrister. He didn't practice because his father died before he had time to do more than 2 or 3 years of practice. And he had to take on... He was the oldest. He had to take on the business and take on the estate. There were two, one at Timston and one here. So it was quite a lot for a young man to accept.
Yes. Is there a memoir of your father or a biography of him somewhere? I mean,
no.
Is anyone written about him at all?
No. You should write about him. Well, the family want me to write my biography.
You mentioned that in your letter, actually. I do hope you will, because you've got a perfect memory. I mean, I don't know why you're so diffident. I mean, there's no problem at all.
Of course, it couldn't last, you see, that state, I think. But, he and his friends would boast about who had the best gamekeeper, the best foreman on the farm, had the best horses and the best cows. The people they employed would be saying that their boss was better than the other person's boss because, you see. It was a society in which, as far as a child could tell, and even a young woman, there didn't seem to be any antagonism or sense of inferiority on either side, you see.
Interesting, yes. It was just a sort of relationship.
Mm. You were good at your job, and that was...
Interesting.
But of course, it was terrible poverty. I mean, I'm not defending.
No.
And you see, now, when the Labour Party bring up the Tide Cottage, they don't realise that the man who looks after the horses has got to have his cottage where the horses are.
The
shepherds, or the cowmen.
You've
got to provide them with a house.
Was your father very popular locally, do you think?
Very popular. Very popular. When he became MP, it was really quite wonderful. The school children gave themselves a holiday, came marching up the woods and sang on the lawn.
That sounds lovely. What was he like as a parent to you? I mean... Was he a good parent?
I remember he expected complete obedience. which as children we thought we would challenge and get him to repeat what he told us to do by just not doing. We never got to the third.
What did he do?
Nothing. It was just his personality. Hmm. But he was a devoted, he was awfully good with children. And again with grandchildren. He came in bursting with laughter on one occasion. Do you know what your young son has said to me? Oh, very old grandpa, will you soon die? To which my father said, no, and didn't.
Well, well, that's marvellous.
He was wonderful. He, very humane, very tolerant. To give you an example, when the when the vaccination bill was passed into an act, it was arm-to-arm vaccination, which was very risky, you see. If the baby had anything, it was passed on to anybody else. And so a clause had been put in the bill that you could refuse to have the child vaccinated if you had conscientious objection. Well, the expression conscientious objection, it didn't register with an agricultural labourer, you see. And he was asked if he had conscientious objection, and he said no. And the magistrate wouldn't give him exemption, you see. Well, of course, my father said, why don't you want the baby back? Well, you see, sir, the missus says this, as how the little one isn't strong enough. Conscientious objection.
Yeah.
The man would give up a day's work and tramp for miles to come to him.
Interesting, yes.
Sooner than go to the local man, you see, who was sticking to the letter.
Mm. That's very interesting. So, in a way, your relationship with your father was a companionship, in a way, was it? Or is that putting it too strongly?
It really was the closest possible companionship. Mm. Yes, I've often thought that if it's a right one, it must be one of the most satisfying relationships, husband and daughter. The attraction of being man and woman, I think, adds something.
It's like mother and son,
a kind of glamour, which will be felt between the mother and the son, between the father and daughter. Mm.
Your mother and father sound as though they were very happy together. I mean,
I think it was really a perfect relationship and gave us a standard which our children were able to maintain.
But was your mother political herself, do you think? I mean,
she was a most admirable speaker and very diffident.
An odd combination.
She would say, look up dismayed from a letter, oh Charles dear, they want me to speak at so and so. Well, I suppose they can't get anyone else. And she would go and make the most delightful. She was a trained singer with a beautiful voice, and I suppose that partly helped. Very attractive, charming-looking person. Mm. But as I say, she always thought that when she was asked to do something, it was because they couldn't get anyone else.
That's interesting, yes.
She
sounds a very attractive person, actually.
Oh, she was.
Was it a very artistic family, your family, do you think?
Not artistic.
No, you didn't sort of sing in the home or play the piano?
I beg your pardon, I was thinking of visual. Mm. Yes, Mother had a most wonderful soprano voice, the kind that gets sweeter as he goes higher. But of course in her day she could only sing at charity concerts. She was extremely popular for charity concerts. Mm. And we had music every night at home.
Did you? And you made music yourselves as children?
Well, we none of us had really any talent for it. My sister and I learnt the piano because all girls learnt the piano.
But not a special thing.
No.
Did you have a lot of servants at home?
We had. I think I reckoned up we were 10.
Do you want it off?
Butler and parlourmaid, cook, kitchen maid, head housemaid, probably two girls from the village as under housemaids learning their trade, and the boot boy. What's that?
That's about 7 or 8.
Yeah. Nurse and governess. Mm. There's 9, you see. Mm. And sometimes, then there was the dairy woman, and of course the 3 outside gardeners, and 2 in the stables. And we were a very unshowy off family. Mm. We considered ourselves just ordinary middle class, comfortably off.
So that must have given your parents a lot more leisure than your parents would have now.
What woman now has has that stuff. It was so responsible. You see, at the end of every year, now you can put the Jibbles machine on again. Do you want me to?
Do carry on, yes.
Yes. My mother had leisure for social activities because, of course, she was backed up by a large staff of servants, cook and kitchen maid, butler and parlour maid, head housemaid, under housemaid, boot and knife boy, for the nurse and governess, and outside three gardeners and two in the stables, a dairy woman. It all needed a lot of organising, and of course there was practically no prepared food. Everything had to be cooked, all winter provision of jams and so on were done in the house, and we entertained tremendously. We very often sat down 20 to a meal. There were two very festive seasons. Dances round Christmas, where all the food was cooked as a matter of course in the house, no caterer. And in the summer, endless tennis tournaments, where between the sets, the girls would mix the mayonnaise, and men and girls together tip and tail the gooseberries and shuck the peas.
There must have been a tremendous lot of work for the servants to do if you did so much entertaining.
Yes, but you see, it was fun, partly. The men would go, boys and girls would both go in and pass the time of day with the cook, you see, and it was I think it was a very happy atmosphere. Mm.
Did your mother get on with the servants well?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes. I don't think she ever got rid of a servant. I think they left either the older women because they were wanted at home or some family thing. And one of the duties of our house and the one or two other houses in the was to train the girls as they left the primary school, because it was the only opening for a girl.
So they'd come up to your house?
They'd come up, you see, they'd be, we'd probably take two as housemaid or scullery maid or kitchen maid, and then the doctor would take one, the big house at the other end of the village would take them. When they knew their job, they then could go out and take a job elsewhere.
So you really did a service to the village, you know?
Oh, yes. And of course, the opening for the boys were in the farms, or the one or two village shops, or the crofts. You see, we had a wonderful smith in the village who did most beautiful decorative ironwork, as well as shoeing the horses.
Did your mother do a lot of social work herself?
She was a poor little guardian. And completely revolutionised the workhouse. She got all the children out of it and boarded out very successfully. I had letters from all over, from every dominion, from boys or girls, you know, as well as from the UK, and they all used the same expression: she was my best friend. And I remember seeing a sailor and obviously wife and baby come up the drive and ask if my mother was at home, and my mother came out to greet them, and the young sailor men said, "Wave to Granny, darling."
It was a tribute.
Oh yes.
So when did she do her sort of social work? In the afternoons?
It wasn't. She would call anywhere where there was trouble, you see, but there were no hours except for the regular meetings and subcommittee at Uckfield, which meant an 8-mile drive, which with a pony was...
Did she help to run any societies, like a girls friendly society or anything like that?
I think the Women's Institute, that came, she was my father gave the land and helped build the village hall, which was the first, there wasn't one before, and my mother became president of the Women's Institute after the first woman who died very young, unfortunately. And so she was, then of course she was deeply concerned in the village, in the Liberal Associations, and in the United Nations Associations.
Was she really?
Yes.
That's when she was rather older.
Of course, that was older, later on, yes.
What did your parents do in the Boer War? I mean, were they...
Oh, very unpopular, because they were opposed to it, and they were boycotted.
Were they really? By whom?
By the Gentry roundabout.
Were they really?
Yes.
You remember that, do you?
That was before my father became an MP, and I think my mother had great pleasure in not returning the calls that were made by those gentlemen and ladies on the new MP.
Well, that's interesting, yes. But did they admire Lloyd George, your parents?
Oh, yes. but more, really, when it came... I can't remember when the rift...
Well, the rift was during...
No, the rift between Lloyd George and Asquith...
Oh, that was 1916, yes, the first world.
I was thinking of that. Mm. And they were more Asquithian than Lloyd George, on the whole.
They must have been, your mother and father must have been annoyed with Asquith on women's suffrage, for instance, weren't they? I mean,
annoyed is a mild word for it. Oh, yes. My father was described by Mrs. Fawcett as the best friend of women in the house. Because, you see, he was... always completely objective. So many of the others say that, you know, it'll be all right on the night. Mm. And he would tell her it's not going to be all right on the night. The people who promised you are going to dither.
Mm. Mm. So he really was a very stalwart sort of supporter.
He was a very stalwart.
Mm. Mm. That's interesting. And yet he liked Asquith better than Lloyd George during the First World War.
Well, that was a purely liberal attitude, you see. Mm. Temperamentally, he would be more in sympathy. I think that's what I mean, with Asquith, you see.
As a university man and all that.
Yes. Mm. And perhaps less extreme than Lloyd George. But a very loyal liberal. But
what did he think about adult suffrage, actually, your father?
Adult suffrage?
Yes.
Oh, yes, he would have been in favour of it. If it had not been a stumbling block to women's suffrage.
I understand.
He wanted adult suffrage, not manhood suffrage.
Mm, mm. Yes, so he wanted women's suffrage first, and then, adult suffrage.
He wanted it as if you were going to move away from a property qualification vote, then you must do it to move at once to adult suffrage and not waste time on manhood suffrage.
I understand, yes, that's interesting, yes. Anyway, we've moved away from you, and we got you as far as Newnham. You've come down with your degree in classics.
Yes.
Now, am I right in saying you went to University College to do statistics straight afterwards?
Yes. yes, that was the next... And then I did a year at the training college at Cambridge.
How did you get on with UNIUL? I mean, did you really train yourself up as a statistician?
Oh, no. Trying to get something, I felt I had an untidy brain, and I thought perhaps if I did, it was rather the same reason as I took classics, you see, that you had to be very exact.
So what, did you come away with a diploma in statistics, or did you just get a few tutorials?
I just found out it wasn't my line of country. It was very difficult. Mm. It meant spending a couple of nights in town with friends and the border, you know. You can imagine transport in those days didn't make it easy.
Mm.
And
what did you see yourself as doing then? I mean, did you feel you would have a career at that point?
No. I was engaged to a penniless barrister, and therefore didn't think of a full-time professional career. I wanted to go on, as my mother had done, with social work, and of course suffrage until we got it.
Your husband, or your fiancé, was a suffragist himself, wasn't he?
Yes, coming out of a very conservative family, he'd never thought of it, you see. But he was one of those, he was an amazingly tolerant, he was a barrister, but his interests were music, pretty well confined to Bach, and philosophy.
Mm. He went to university as well, presumably.
Oh, he was a new college man.
Was he really? So, was that how you met him?
We met him. My brother brought him home at the end of the first term for one of this Christmas dances.
Here?
At the big house over at the other side of the valley. And he alleges that it was love at first sight. But quite sure. Anyhow, he made an indelible impression on me the first night, because I was dancing with my brother, and the American fellow student from Cambridge was supposed to be dancing with my husband, who was leaning without dancing up against the wall, and my husband said, "Dance, you juggins," and to which my future fiancé replied, "Can't, my collar's too high." And I thought, what a marvellous reply.
So anyway, that started it all off.
It started it all off.
Well.
After that, whenever there was a photograph of the tennis tournament taken, we always seemed to be side by side.
So anyway, when you were doing statistics, you were already engaged, and then...
No, I think... Yes. Mm. No, well, you see, you didn't get formally engaged. Oh, no, we knew we had a long time to wait.
Mm.
Because people didn't marry.
Mm.
As recklessly as they do today.
No.
You see, you had to... neither side expected you to marry unless there was a chance of a stable home and a stable, as far as possible, a stable income.
Mm. Yes, that's interesting. So, you then went to a vacation school, didn't you? What was that?
Oh, that was my first social job.
I see. That's after you'd done the statistics. You went off...
That was...
In the summer, I suppose, was it?
Yes. The National Council of Women branch in Hull, where I had a very great friend, a very distinguished woman doctor.
Oh, I think I've heard. What's her name? McLeod or something like that? Or
it was her psychiatrist.
I've come across her, I think, anyway.
Yes. She was supposed to be one of the outstanding of the early women doctors.
I think I know the woman, actually, anyway.
Yes. She looked like a Yorkshire Terrier with kind of curly hair and the brightest eyes one could possibly, and very small.
She was very active in child welfare, wasn't
That's
she?
Right.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
I think I know the woman.
Yes. And she said, I think it was she who suggested me that I should run a summer school for the dockside children.
In her frightful
poverty. And a very low standard. I mean, if I walked down to the docks, the women would come out with their hair undone. The children would run out in the hot sun without any clothes on, but with marks of bites, you know, and very, very poor.
And so what were you supposed to do?
I think they're the big shipping people. They probably, I don't know whether they still exist. I think they were called Sism, and they subscribed very largely and gave a great... And,
so was it really to keep the children off the streets
in the
holidays?
It was to give them something to do in the holidays and give them the chance of some food, and but mostly occupation, to keep them off the streets.
So what did you do?
Well, I organised more or less competent voluntary workers, and we did all the ball games, and plasticine and paints and...
It wasn't really teaching, I mean, it wasn't learning.
No, it wasn't learning, it was occupational.
Mm. So you did that twice, did you? Two summers?
Yeah, not sure. Mm. I only remember the horror of the first, when I was completely inexperienced. I mean, it was...
But it must have been made quite an impact on your attitude, didn't it?
Oh, yes, of course, because, you see, it was a different kind of poverty to what I knew in the village.
Mm. How did it differ, really? I mean...
Well, you see, in a village thing, the wages were terribly low. I mean, our head gardener was exceptional in getting 30 shillings a week. Mm. But the cottages, my father let the cottages at 1 and 6 or 2 and 6 a week, which even if you think of the difference in value, didn't really allow of keeping them in repair. I mean, in a way, the cottage, even paying rent, was part of your income in that sense.
So you had less money, but it went further, sort of thing, in the countryside.
They all had gardens. They grew their vegetables. They kept their hens. They occasionally kept a pig.
So their
income. They could collect any wood, any fallen wood.
So they had fuel.
So they had fuel.
Mm. Anyway, in Hull, you had none of
those. Well, of course, you had none of those. Mm. You see, no garden, and therefore no opportunity of growing anything.
Mm. So did you make friends with the children? I mean, do you...
Oh, yes. They accepted you as they accepted the teachers in the primary school, I think. I don't suppose they thought we were very different.
Mm. So that interested you even more?
That, of course, launched me into social work, and then, of course, while I was secretary to the Suffrage Society, I couldn't do anything else.
Mm.
And then, when I was no longer secretary, I was voted on to the executive.
Mm.
Had an amusing time a little later when I was standing for the executive of the suffrage and also for the Women's Liberal Federation. And the Women's Liberal Federation said I hadn't a chance because I was too much suffrage, and the suffrage people said it would tell heavily against me that I was standing for the Liberals, and I got on both. And remained on both as long as I wanted to.
How did you get to know the Hull doctor that you mentioned? I mean, Was she a friend of the family or something?
No, I think it must have been through suffrage.
I see, yes. So when did you first start, when did you first join the NUWSS? When you were at Newnham?
No, I think as soon as my father...
Well, as a schoolgirl, did you?
My sister and I started the Younger Suffragists, which was a group of young middle-class girls in London. Well, and that must have been, I think, after my father became an MP, when we had a flat in London, you see, as well as a house down here. And she and then we became members of the first suffrage club in London. My sister having to put up her hair before she was admitted as a member. None of your long-haired ladies of today.
But, so you joined the suffrage movement as a girl, really?
Oh, yes.
Not as a woman?
No.
But why did you start these young suffragists? What were they doing?
Well, you see, we went and stood at meetings.
Like Mary Stocks?
Like Mary, yes.
Was she a young suffragist? Well,
I expect she was.
She certainly did act as a stewardess at a meeting.
Yes, and went into the office and helped with paperwork, you know, folding envelopes, sending out notices, and also trying to interest people of our own age, you see.
Middle-class girls.
Well, yes, because I did work with others. I worked with Lily Montagu, with her club for girls.
Did you? Before you went to Newnham?
Yeah, before I went to Newnham.
Did you?
And
so when you went to Hull, you'd already had some experience in club work. What was Lila Montague's club for then?
It was to try and give an outlet to girls who were working long hours in London in factories or two of the classes that I remember was one physical exercise, which was extremely difficult to organise because you see. The garments that women wore then, with stays and that, were not conducive to doing really very violent exercise. And also, of course, you see, the girls were so poor that they couldn't take off a garment. They were afraid of showing, though their friends would be exactly the same, but you see, they could neither take off their blouse or, you see, and... So that was one. And then she had the newspaper class, I went and talked to them, asked them what they thought was the most important thing in the paper that day or week, you see, and then told them I thought agreed with them or didn't agree with them, to try and get them interested in something besides themselves. And of course, they were in a very poor physical shape. Though, in a way, they did better. You see, now when the girls smoke, there's no goodness, whereas in those days, they swallowed sweets all the time. Well, of course, it's much better for people to suck a sweet
than
to smoke a cigarette.
True,
So they compensated a bit, like that.
But you helped to run both these classes, did you, as a schoolgirl?
Yes.
That's really quite difficult.
Yes.
But it didn't worry you?
I think perhaps there, the Irishness in my family come out. And the feeling, everything once.
And you did it with your sister anyway, so
yes,
I suppose that helped.
Yes.
Who was Lila Montague, actually? Was she related to the Jewish family?
They were the big Jewish family. Edwin Montague, who was a great friend of ours, became Secretary for India, didn't he?
Yes.
It was a remarkable family, extremely advanced socially and very wealthy and very generous. Very strictly Jewish. I mean, they were...
Where was the club, actually, that you went to?
My feeling is, I think it is more, it was somewhere near that Tottenham Court Road area.
I meant to ask you, by the way, what religion were your parents? Were they Anglican?
Anglican.
Were they?
Yes. Father read the... not very... not very ecclesiastically minded, you know. They didn't take... we always we went in a family procession, the half mile to church, followed by the train of the servants, of course, you see. And, that was an amusing survival from an earlier age. We had a family pew on the first floor with our private staircase from outside the church. And below us was the identical pew, but on the ground floor, for the servants. So we were no idea that you mixed even in church, you kept the hierarchy. And then I remember in the old church, which was burnt down when I was a child, but I remember my first going to church, and the farmers and tradespeople were in kind of loose boxes. And then at the back of the church were the benches on which the labourers and their families sat. So that the Almighty knew exactly which... possibly work.
Was your father an evangelical, would you say? Or
well, more even, yes.
Sort of lowish church. Didn't really mean very much in party
times. He read the lessons, subscribed heavily to the quite inadequate, miserable salary of the local padre. He and our neighbours, the other end of the village, the other big house.
The doctors.
Really raised his raised the salary to a possible standard for a man with a family.
When you took the servants to church, though, what did they wear?
Oh, they wore their afternoon dress of black.
And bonnets did they have?
Yes, I think they. My mother wasn't at all strict about that kind of thing. She was very tolerant, and I don't think the cook wouldn't wear a black dress. But then she wouldn't in the house either. As the housemaid and parlourmaid. Would put on their Sunday dress, which would be naturally a black one.
I see, that's interesting. Well, look, I mustn't